In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence.
Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Welcome back in. And Welcome to the first episode of 2022. Mitch, it's good to be here. Another year, another episode of the Sports Hour podcast. Mitch, you know that we've been doing this podcast now in like four different years.
Two separate decades.
I mean, that is just,
yeah. You
put it like that and make it sound old. In reality, you know, not quite that old, but still, it is 2022. We've taken quite the hiatus over the holidays. And so we are back and just in time for a great part of the NFL season, the extra week, the first Week 18 in NFL history coming up this weekend. So we'll get into the playoff implications of these matchups, how the playoff picture looks right now, and ultimately, predict what's going to happen this next week. We're also going to take a look back, Mitch, on 2021 and some of the best moments around sports. That should be pretty fun.
That'll be a blast. I think we got a... Not any foreshadowing, but maybe we have moments that we like about certain teams more than others.
Sure.
Not foreshadowing at all.
Mitch is a homer. Just don't forget that. Keep that in your mind as you're listening to this now. And we get into that later.
I made I made multiple New Year's resolutions this year. I got to get that bikini body back. First of all, number one.
Sure.
Okay. Number two, I'm just going to own the fact that I'm a homer. I'm gonna stop denying it. Just stop trying to justify it and come up with these bogus reasons. No, I'm a homer. Yes, I love my teams, and I will stand for my teams at all times. So even when I talk shit about them, just know that I stand for them. So
powerful moment here on the Sports Hour as Mitch comes to terms with your true identity, and I'm proud of you, buddy.
2022 is all about finding myself, man.
Self-discovery.
That's right.
Mitch is a homer, and we've known it all along, and I'm just glad you've accepted it. It feels good. Now I can call you a homer, and it's not a slur. It's like a yes, I am, and I'm proud.
I trace this back to the double doink. Wow, I just said that word on podcast. Wow.
I think I've been
just grieving since that moment. And they say that acceptance is the final stage of grieving. So
yes.
Here we are. I'm in acceptance mode. I'm a homer, and I will stand with it.
That's beautiful.
And Cody Parkey can still suck it. So,
hey, this is a beautiful moment here to start the 2022, era of the Sports Hour. Mitch self-discovering, coming to terms with himself, saying the term double doink on the podcast.
Oh, that felt icky.
A shiver up your spine?
You know, there are certain curse words you refuse to say because you just don't like the words. That's one of them that I refuse to say.
Until today.
Yeah.
Everything must come to an end, I guess. So there we are. Mitch, also, before we kind of jump in here, we will do the campus tour as always, the national championship game coming up next Monday. So we'll do a little brief recap of the bowl season, the college football playoff semifinal games, and then ultimately give our predictions for Alabama and Georgia. But Mitch, we wanted to start off the podcast today reflecting on 2021 and the best moments in sports from the past season. So we've decided to look at this. We're each going to give a moment from the various leagues. So the NFL, best moment in the NFL in 2021, best moment in the NBA, MLB, and in college football. So Mitch, where do you want to start off? I'll let you pick. Where do you want to start off here?
You know what? It's the football time of year. It's high stakes football time of year. Let's start in the NFL.
Okay, perfect.
Start in the NFL. Look, I got a best moment, and staying on brand and true to my New Year's resolution of owning the fact that I'm a homer. I think the best moment of 2021, at least for me, was when the Bears traded up to number 11 to draft Justin Fields. I mean, Sid Luckman, 1948. I don't know how many times I have to scream this on this podcast to make you guys realize how long we've been without a quarterback. But it was like the moment of relief. Like, we reached the top of the mountain. Like, we're here. We finally got a quarterback. And now there's a whole new mountain to climb. And we have to like progress this quarterback and put ourselves now in playoff contention. Obviously we're not that this year, but you know, there was signs of improvement and flashes of brilliance. We have hope for Justin Fields, but I felt like we finally got our guy, the quarterback out of Ohio State, when we traded up to 11 and drafted Justin Fields. That's my best NFL moment of 2021.
I love that, Mitch, because we were watching the draft together. We had Zoomed or FaceTimed, and we were watching it together. If I remember correctly, I was like 30 seconds ahead of you, and I had made a commitment before the pick was made to mask my reaction as much as I could, as not to spoil it. But I vividly remember your reaction to the news that they had selected Justin Fields. That might be one of the happiest moments I've ever seen you have, but we've been friends for a long time.
It was so happy.
It's big. And listen, as an NFL, as a fan of an NFL franchise, you just want hope. You want something to look forward to and say, this is something that can lead us to the promised land. And I think Justin Fields is that prospect. And despite a losing season with the Bears this season, you've seen those glimmers of hope. You see the kind of athlete, the kind of leader he's going to be. Very exciting for Chicago, as hopefully they move on from Matt Nagy. Hopefully they move on from Ryan Pace and begin a new era in Chicago. But, you know, Mitch, you're a homer. You accepted it. I love that here on the podcast. And so we start off right with this moment here. I think it's fitting.
That's right. That's right. By the way, I'm just going to echo what you said. Get Nagy out.
Yes.
Get Pace out.
Yes.
And we'll be good. We'll be good.
Hey, listen, I got to get quick reaction and not prepare you for this, but we have started to see some rumors, some rumblings that there is interest within the NFL of having Jim Harbaugh back in the league. After the success with Michigan, getting to the college football playoff, there is some mutual interest in a return to the NFL for Jim Harbaugh. One of the destinations has been the Las Vegas Raiders, who obviously have an opening, and that's the kind of big time splashy hire you'd expect. But another potential landing spot that I've seen mentioned is the Chicago Bears. He has ties to the organization. I believe he even played there for a little bit.
He was a quarterback for Ditka there. Yeah.
And so what do you think as a Bears fan? How would you feel about the hire of Jim Harbaugh as the head coach in Chicago?
I mean, bring the man home. I mean, he just won AP Coach of the Year. So, you know, let's bring the best coach in college football in. I know that there's been plenty of examples of that not working out in the past, but this guy has winning pedigree in the NFL already. So
yeah, he didn't go to a Super Bowl.
He was really close to winning one too.
Like,
and you know what? What he did in San Francisco kind of seems like it would fit what the Bears would want to do with Justin Fields, what he did with Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick and those guys. Like, this seems like that would fit what they want to do. So I'm all for bringing the man home. I know he's a Michigan guy by he was born in Michigan. He's a Michigan guy, but Chicago was his home when he was in the NFL. I know, and Indianapolis.
Sure.
But you know what? He's a blue collar kind of guy. Bring him home to Chicago.
Okay.
I would love it.
All right. I loved that. I saw that and I meant to ask you. I'm glad I saved it here for the podcast, because it certainly is an interesting name. Definitely a name to monitor during this coaching carousel in the NFL, as I'm sure a number of teams, including Vegas and potentially Chicago, could be interested. My moment, Mitch, best moment from 2021. In the NFL. An honorable mention to a classic moment in NFL history, the Nickelodeon game.
Oh.
The NFL playoff game airing on Nickelodeon with your Bears and the New Orleans Saints in January. Just an awful game. I can't believe the NFL subjected children to watching the 8-8 Chicago Bears playing a playoff game. Novel idea, horrible execution. It gets an honorable mention. But Mitch, the moment for me is the week or two span in August when it seemed like a foregone conclusion that Aaron Rodgers was going to leave the NFL and be the host of Jeopardy. Like, it was like, this guy just won MVP and he's about to walk away from it all and just be a TV host. That's it, huh? Like, and for a week or two, I legitimately thought that is what is happening. And this is so strange. And here we are, Mitch, the beginning of 2022. And he came back and the Packers have the number one seed in the NFC. And he's probably on his way to another MVP, potentially. Certainly a Super Bowl run ahead, you know, at least contender for them. Crazy how that's all gone. But that moment there, that's a classic one.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we were all just sitting on the edge of our seats waiting to find out what's the next move. He had mentioned his interest in hosting Jeopardy, by the way, shout out and RIP Alex Trebek. But you know, he wanted, you know, that was like an ambition of his. He really enjoyed it the one time he did it. And it was like, it was weird to think about Aaron Rodgers not playing football and hosting Jeopardy, but at the same time, it seemed so perfect. And I wouldn't have been mad if he did it. So like,
what a fascinating alternate reality, right? You know, about he doesn't come back and he's the host of Jeopardy. Like, what, how different this season is, you know?
But then
the vaccine stuff, all the crazy stuff midseason with him and the vaccine and all that, but we don't get any of that. None of that exists because he's not in the NFL. Like, it's a whole different, like, what happens this year? It's crazy.
But then he does come back and he walks into training camp looking like he had some spiritual hike high on peyote somewhere in the wilderness of India.
He probably did.
And he's like, come back all zen. He's just like, let's play football, bro. It's like this guy, he good for him.
He
is not giving a rip what anyone else thinks about him. And I love that. I love that. Good for him.
Yeah.
You're right. That was a great moment.
I'll never forget that the 2 week span when I thought the NFL MVP was going to just quit in his prime and be a TV host. You know, that's just absurd. But Mitch, let's go to the NBA. What's the best moment in the NBA from 2021?
My favorite moment from the NBA 2021 has to be a play that cemented itself as, in my mind, a top five NBA playoffs play of all time, NBA playoffs moment of all time. It's up there with Jordan's shot over Elo. Okay. It's up there with Robert Horry and, you know, the 20 billion times he sunk a three at the buzzer. It's got to be DeAndre Ayton's alley-oop buzzer beater against the Clippers. I forget exactly what game that was. Game two. It was game two of the Western semis, I believe.
Western Conference Finals.
Oh, that's right. It was the finals. Unbelievable play. Unbelievable play. And I mean, I think we came on this show the next night or the night, you know, two nights after. We're like, you know, this has to be an all-time moment. This has to be an all-time moment in the NBA. And DeAndre Ayton, the guy we've kind of been waiting for to break out, had kind of a breakout year. And then he makes a all-time play like this. That's an easy one for me. It's got to be up there as my favorite moment.
I love that, Mitch, because, yeah, I do remember getting on this podcast and discussing where does this rank among the all-time plays. And, you know, at the time we said, you know, it depends on do they make an NBA Finals? Do they win an NBA Finals? How do that play out? Obviously, they go to the finals and end up falling to the Bucks. But, I mean, still a fantastic moment, a fantastic play. Definitely in recent history up there with the Kawhi buzzer beater against the Sixers, right, in 2019. And some of the other big moments, the LeBron James block in the NBA Finals, Game 7, 2016 against the Warriors. But I love that moment, Mitch. And kind of along those same lines, my favorite moment from 2021 for the NBA was the NBA Finals, the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Phoenix Suns, because we had just come from a 10-year stretch where it was LeBron James and or the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals every single year. It was one or both of those combinations for four straight years. It was that LeBron versus the Warriors, but you had the Miami Heat years for 4 years with LeBron. Then you get into the Warriors and the Cavs rivalries. Then you have the Warriors fall to Kawhi. Then you have LeBron winning an NBA Finals in LA with the Lakers. And then 2021 comes around, and it was the Phoenix Suns, who nobody expected to really get up there, had a fantastic regular season and just tore it up on the pace to get there. And the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis finally reaching that final form, that true identity, that all-time level player, and ultimately winning the NBA Finals, carrying that Milwaukee Bucks team on his back. It was an incredible moment. It was so much fun to watch a young superstar emerge before our eyes and finally do what we all expected him to do for the last couple of years, that he needed to grow and learn through those losses. We finally see him do that. And we saw two teams and fan bases that don't get to be on this stage very often. Teams that had not been on this stage very often at all. I think the Suns had, I don't know, the Suns won maybe an NBA Finals. I know for the Bucks, it had been since the 70s, since Kareem, that they'd even been there. So that moment in itself, I thought, for the NBA was huge. It gives me hope for what the next 10 years will look like. Perhaps the parity will be greater in the league as more and more stars emerge. But I thought that was the best moment, and kind of coincides with yours, an unexpected players making big plays and, you know, grabbing the attention of the NBA.
Yeah. As a casual fan who doesn't really start paying attention until like right before the playoffs and then the playoffs, so refreshing to see two new faces after a decade of seeing the same people over and over and over again. Absolutely agree. It was definitely up there as one of the best moments, just for the freshness of it. It was brand new. Loved watching it.
For sure. All right, Mitch, let's talk about the best moments in 2021 for the MLB. I will go first here. I'm going to say the best moment for me, in my opinion, from 2021 was the early season Shohei Ohtani sensation. In April and May, when Shohei was just absolutely dominating, it felt like the sports world. And there's been very few times in the last decade that it feels like baseball has really taken the main narrative in the world of sports. It's always overlapping with the MLB, or sorry, with the NBA and with the NFL. It has very few months where it just gets to sort of have the spotlight. And even in the World Series, you're in the midst of the NFL seasons and the beginning of the NBA season. So for that time, though, it felt like the biggest story in sports was Shohei Ohtani and what he was doing as a two-way player, and the sort of throwback that he was, and yet something unique and new and incredible. And he had a fantastic season, really one of the defining moments of the baseball season from this past year was his ascension. So for me, that those first couple months, that excitement about what he was going to do next, or how could he keep this up, that was my favorite moment from this past year.
Yeah, I mean, it was something we hadn't seen in literally 100 years since Babe Ruth did it in the early 1920s, 1919 to 1922-ish. He was that two-way guy. You're almost on pins and needles every night to see, like, okay, when's he going to fall off on the mound? Okay, when's he going to fall off at the plate? One of these has to give at some point, and they never did. Like, I mean, if you can make the argument that he was definitely stronger at the plate than he was on the mound, but, like, even on the mound, that's a guy you want in your rotation. Like, that's a guy you can shut out there every 5 days, and he's gonna shut down a lineup on any given night. Absolutely. So entertaining to watch Shohei Ohtani when he gets the opportunity to hit for himself, or be on, you know, when he's on the mound, or, you know, come off of a 7-inning start and go ahead and DH the next night and then drop a bomb or two. Just absolutely incredible baseball to watch those first few months with Shohei.
Absolutely. Mitch, what's the best moment in your mind from 2021?
Okay. I want to take you back to April 2nd. April 2nd, it had been 552 days since Trey Mancini had stepped on a baseball field because he was battling stage 3 colon cancer. He comes out, I think his first official at bat was April 8th. If I remember correctly, yes, April 8th was his first official AB. He wound up playing 147 games, hitting 21 homers, driving in 71, and winning AL's Comeback Player of the Year. Just the story of how this guy beat cancer, has not been on a big league field in almost 2 years, comes out and absolutely, I mean, puts on a clinic. 21 home runs, 71 RBIs is a good year. And doing it in Baltimore with a team around him that wasn't very good at all. You know, this was an incredible story for Trey Mancini, who went from fighting for his life to competing on a baseball field again in under 2 years. An incredible feel-good story was the Trey Mancini story for me.
I love that. Yeah, great. Great, Mitch. Great pick. Okay, let's wrap it up here with the best moment in college football from 2021. I will let you go first, my friend. I have an idea of where you're going here, but let's hear it.
Staying true to the brand, Dallin. Staying true to the brand, accepting the, you know, acceptance. That's what I'm all about this year. Alabama winning the Natty against Ohio State. You actually called me out before the pod when we were talking about this, and I was like, well, what if the best moment hasn't come yet? And you're like, Mitch, it's not 2021 anymore. You can't call out a future moment that happened in 2022. That doesn't count. And you were absolutely right. It has to be the 2020, the national championship game against Ohio State last year, the 52-24 victory. Beating Notre Dame, a good Notre Dame team in the Rose Bowl to get there. Bama winning the Natty for me is an easy one. I mean, and I think any other suggestion is absolutely absurd. Absolutely absurd.
I'm sure you're expecting
homerism.
I bet next year this time, if Alabama wins the championship next week, I'm sure I can predict what your moment from 2022 will be. It'll probably
spoiler
be
alert.
Another Bama championship. I'm going to go with Mitch, the best moment to me. And this is not exclusive to college football. This is all college sports. It's the NIL era, which began on July 1st in 2021, where college athletes were able to profit off of their name, image, and likeness. And in the past 6 months, it's been a whole new world of college sports. I can tell you in my job, being able to secure exclusive interviews with players because we can compensate them for their time. They can earn money to give their opinions on the radio or feature on podcasts. And I think there's been a lot of cool things that have come out of the NIL era. I think of Tyler Linderbaum, who took, I think it was somewhere in the hundreds of thousands of dollars he donated, NIL profit that he earned, donated to his community. I believe it was like a local hospital or foundation there. You know, he doesn't need that money. He's going to go on the NFL and make millions of dollars. But a college athlete's able to now raise that money, earn that money, and pay it forward to a great cause is awesome. I love what BYU did this year with their collaboration with Built Bar, where every athlete, every walk-on was compensated enough to pay for their tuition, so that walk-ons didn't have to work during the football season, that they could get paid. And that was provided by a company who was willing to put up that money. Those kind of stuff, that is the beauty of the NIL era. And I think we're only going to see more positive things like that. So to me, that's the biggest moment. It's changed the landscape of college sports in general, and certainly college football with the incentive it now gives players depending on where they would like to go play. So
yeah, I love it. Yep.
My backup to this, my honorable mention of this, was the conference realignment in college football. Texas and Oklahoma deciding to move to the SEC was a huge moment, and the ripple effects, it continue to this day still. You know, we've seen, you know, the Big 12 expansion and then the AAC expansion and et cetera, as it goes. It has been quite the ripple effect that moment had. So that was another one I wanted to mention. That specifically for college football, obviously a very big impact.
Yeah. Maybe a death sentence for Texas. I mean, that organization just can't get it right.
Who knows? In Oklahoma in a brand new era under Brett Venables, you know, we'll see what the, how the SEC treats them in a few years. But Mitch, that's it for the best moments in 2021. Probably next week we'll do some predictive 2022, looking forward to this year sort of stuff. We'll you'll have to look forward to that next episode. If you have any ideas for us on that, let us know. We'd love to, you know, hear sort of that. We don't want to just do like New Year's resolutions, right? Like we want to do something a little different.
I want to make takes so spicy that you'll go on the hill for it.
Oh, okay. Are like super, super hot. Okay.
We only have one entry on the hill so far, and that
is true.
Desmond Ridder goes in the back half of the first round. So I want stuff so spicy that it's like, ooh, mucho caliente. That has to go on the hill. And
okay.
You're willing to die on that. So.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, I'll have to prepare myself for that one and come up with some good stuff.
Heads up.
Yeah, I love it. All right, Mitch, let's jump into the campus tour here. As the college football season is almost over. Monday night, the final game of the college football season, the national championship game between Alabama and Georgia will officially end it, and we'll get into the beginning of draft season as prospects prepare for the NFL draft in April. But as we wrap up the campus tour here for the season, Mitch, we wanted to look at some of the best bowl performances from the bowl season. A lot of very interesting games, a handful of players that really stood out. And I want to start here with the quarterback who we're not talking about in the first round conversation, probably shouldn't be in the first round conversation, but a guy who's going to get drafted nonetheless and who's had a big year. In fact, it's the biggest year in the FBS record books. It's Bailey Zappe, who capped off an incredible 2021 season with Western Kentucky with a 59-38 victory in the Boca Raton Bowl over Appalachian State. Zappe threw for 422 yards and 6 touchdowns in the game, Mitch, which is a big game nonetheless. What makes it all the more special is that he set the FBS marks for passing yards in a season and touchdowns in a season. The previous passing yards mark was 5,833 yards set by BJ Simons of Texas Tech in 2003. Zappe finished the season with over 5,900 yards, so over 100 more yards than the record.
That's so
stupid. 62 passing touchdowns is the record. 60 was the old record set by Joe Burrow in 2019, that championship season. So keep in mind there, Joe Burrow played 15 games that year, right, on his way to a national championship because you play an extra game. So in less games, Bailey Zappe had 2 more touchdowns than arguably the greatest season we've ever seen from a college player ever in Joe Burrow in 2019. Bailey Zappe had an incredible season. He's going to take that to the Senior Bowl in the pre-draft process to try to get himself in the NFL. I would not be shocked if he went as early as the third round. I think anywhere from the third to sixth round is probably a fair estimation, but the pre-draft process is going to determine a lot. Being in the Senior Bowl next to, Kenny Pickett, Malik Willis, Desmond Ridder, you know, some of those first round prospects will do him justice, but big time performance in his final, performance as a college athlete for Bailey Zappe, big time for the Hilltoppers. And wanted to give him a shout out here on the pod.
I mean, honestly, if this guy throws just a few, like makes a few different, like doesn't make those mistakes and maybe throws, you know, 4 or 5 fewer interceptions, are we talking about the greatest season ever put together by a quarterback of all time?
I mean, he was 33 yards away from 6,000 passing yards. I mean, he would be the only person to ever reach 6K.
Like, you know? He literally had like 0.1% more efficient and he would have had the greatest quarterback season of all time. Look, I mean, this guy's probably going to go in the third round. You're right. I mean, he's going to be a late day 2, day 3 type of guy. But you know how the old statistic goes. Actually, round 6 quarterbacks have a higher winning percentage all time in the NFL than first round quarterbacks.
There you go.
Tom Brady actually holds the large amount of those wins for 6 round quarterbacks, like an overwhelming amount.
Right. Yeah, probably all of them, but you know.
I think Matt Hasselbeck is second on that list with like 80 something. Right. Tom Brady is like 240 something. So, I mean, an absolutely fantastic performance. And what a way to cap off a fantastic year for the Western Kentucky product.
Yeah. The other player who wanted to give a mention here, and arguably the best game from this bowl season, the Rose Bowl, the Utes and the Buckeyes, Ohio State wins in a thriller 48-45. CJ Stroud, Heisman finalist, had a big game, school record 573 passing yards and a record tying 6 touchdowns. But that's not even the guy we're highlighting. As I just said, he set school records and tied school records, and that's not even the guy we're highlighting here, because we're highlighting the wide receiver. Jackson Smith and Jigba set the FBS bowl game record with 347 receiving yards on 15 catches, a school record, 15 catches and 3 touchdowns. 347 receiving yards, Mitch.
That's so stupid. That's so
I can't
dumb.
Even do that in Madden. Like, I legit, like, I can't do that in Madden. I don't think there's enough time. I don't think it's possible.
I was going to say those are Madden numbers, but, like, you're right. I don't think I could either. So, I mean, an unbelievable performance. You know, just I don't want to say his name because I'm worried I'm going to slaughter it, and that's just disrespectful. To absolutely butcher.
Call him JSN, because that's how people are tweeting about him. JSN, perfect. Jackson Smith and Jigba.
JSN from Rockwall, Texas. So there we all know exactly who we're talking about. The kid's fantastic. He had an absolute fantastic game. Congratulations on the record and congratulations on the Rose Bowl win. I mean, you won the granddaddy of them all in record fashion. Fantastic. Yeah.
Ohio State was down 14 at halftime to the Utes, who scored 35 points in the first half, were held to just 10 in the second half. Obviously Ohio State able to come back and get the win there. But I mean, this was big for Ohio State. I mean, they had lost Jameson Williams, right, who transferred to Alabama and then had a big season for the Tide. And I mean, we're talking about an Ohio State team that didn't have, I believe, Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson were not playing in this game, as they are headed to the NFL and had opted out. Yeah. And so to have a younger player like this, who ended his season with 1,600 receiving yards, to have a game like this on the biggest game of the season, pretty special. He's definitely put himself in the limelight coming into 2022. And I'm sure the eyes will be on him coming into the next college football season.
Pick a number between 1 and 20, and I think we'll see this guy in that conversation when it comes to NFL draft preseason.
Yes.
Like recency bias will play well for NSJ or for JSN.
JSN, so, yes. Yes. 100%. I'm with you.
And rightfully so.
Absolutely. I mean, you put up numbers like that, you deserve some attention. Mitch, let's talk about the college football playoff semifinal games. And let's start with your Alabama Crimson Tide, who got it done in the Cotton Bowl over the college football darling, the underdog Cincinnati. Mitch, I know you don't feel bad that the Cincinnati Bearcats did not get it done. I want to start this off by saying that Cincinnati had a fine performance against Alabama. And we're talking about a dominant team, the best team in college football this year. They were the number one seed for a reason. They proved that against Georgia. I like to expect Cincinnati to win this game was going to be fool's gold, fool's errand, right? To expect them to have it super close was going to be a long shot. And we have seen in the history of the college football playoff era that these semifinal games have never been close. Like, of every 6 semifinal games, there's maybe one that's pretty good. Most of the time, it's a pretty significant blowout by whoever the better teams are. And it's usually the case for both the semifinal games. This year was no exception. Alabama gets it done over Cincinnati 27-6. They just couldn't stop the run, and Alabama committed to the run with Bijan Robinson, and he had a big game, 200 yards for him in this one, and Cincinnati never had an answer. And on offense, Cincinnati was limited all season. Their strength was the defense. And so to only give up 27 to an Alabama team is pretty good, considering their offense couldn't do anything. So I think Cincinnati's defense showed up, did their part in that regard. Cincinnati's offense was clearly limited and too limited to compete with this Alabama defense. A solid performance for Alabama sets them up for the rematch with Georgia. But your thoughts on this game and Bama's path to victory?
Yeah, I think Alabama did what they were supposed to do against a great defense, which was establish the run early. Brian Robinson had 204 yards on the ground. Fantastic performance from him. And you know what? You're playing the number one team in the country with the Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback. This is always going to be a tough matchup. Cincinnati, I don't think any less of them as a team. I think that they met the toughest matchup possible. So, you know, my takeaway from this game is, number one, roll damn tide. And number two, I applaud Cincinnati on a fantastic season. They did hold us to 27, which was quite the task.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Cincinnati still, in my mind, a great program, great team. It's just tough to run up against that damn tide, my guy.
Yeah. And the thing is, yeah. And I don't, and I hope this doesn't take away from anything that Cincinnati did, because they deserved to be in this playoff.
Oh,
undoubtedly.
Absolutely. Yes.
And they had a fantastic season, and this doesn't take anything away from that. Whether it was Notre Dame or Baylor or whoever else you wanted to put in this game, the outcome is likely the same, if not worse. Cincinnati was legit. Alabama is just really, really good. And again, as I said, go look at the history of semifinal games. The only one I can remember from a couple years ago, or maybe it was last year, Clemson, Ohio State has had some good semifinal games. Basically, anything other than that has been like Alabama blowing out UW or Oregon blowing out Florida State or whoever. You know, it's just like they're never a good game. So, yeah, I think Cincinnati has a solid defense. I thought they did enough. They couldn't stop the run. That was never their strength. They're good in pass protection. They have great DBs. They held up their end of the bargain, but the offense was limited. Desmond Ridder didn't have a very good game. Couldn't run the ball for Cincinnati, just 74 yards on 26 carries for the Bearcats. And ultimately they fall in this game, but good to see them get the opportunity. And I'm just glad we got the game. I'm glad they got the opportunity, and I'm sure Cincinnati is just grateful they had the opportunity as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to think about, like, had we seen Cincinnati, Georgia, would we have seen a different outcome? I don't think so, just because of how dominant Georgia's defense is, and we'll get into that right now. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia beats Michigan 34-11 in the Orange Bowl. So say what you want about Cincinnati, but they had a smaller loss margin to Alabama than Michigan did to Georgia. So if you're going to claim anyone didn't belong in the playoff, you would have to say Michigan is the one who didn't belong because they lost bigger. But 34-11, the Bulldogs get it done. This was surprising to me. I was not surprised by the outcome of the Alabama-Cincinnati game, right? I would not have been shocked if Cincinnati was within 10 points or at least kind of hung around. But, you know, not surprised by that outcome. I thought Michigan would compete a little more in this game. I thought Georgia would probably win, but I expected a little more out of the Wolverines. But ultimately this running attack that was there all season was not able to get it done against this Georgia front. 27-91 on the ground for Michigan. Same sort of situation as Cincinnati. When you limited their ability to run the ball, which those teams relied on, their quarterbacks were not good enough to get it done. And we saw that with Michigan deploying both JJ McCarthy and Cade McNamara. It doesn't matter who they had. It was not going to happen against Georgia's defense. And the Georgia offense able to run the ball efficiently. Stetson Bennett had a really good game, you know, and that's hopefully, you know, for them, that might bode well heading into this college football championship game. They need a big performance from their quarterback to have a shot against the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, I mean, it was going to be tough sledding for anyone who matched up against the Georgia defense. You know, Cade McNamara had a great year, but, you know, and JJ McCarthy, I think, filled in just fine, even though he didn't complete as many passes. He did have the one passing touchdown, but the run game wasn't there for him. And when you're down 27-3 at the half, that's a tough hole to climb out of against a dominant Georgia defense. So, I would like to say that I'm not shocked or that I'm shocked by this outcome. But I'm really not, because Georgia's defense just stepped up and did what they've done all year, even against a Michigan offense that was pretty potent the entire year. So as much as I would say to be like, oh man, Michigan never showed up, to me, it's just, I'm not as shocked because Georgia's defense is that good.
Sure. Yeah. And
they've had one collapse the entire year, and that was the SEC championship game.
That's the only game that we've ever questioned how good Georgia was. And it was against Alabama. And, you know, speaking of that, here we go. The national championship game, Georgia, Alabama. Here's the shot to prove how good you actually are. Was that game a fluke? Did they figure out for that game? How do you respond if you're Kirby Smart against, you know, Nick Saban here? Right now, ESPN's FPI Football Power Index has the Bulldogs favored 58% in this matchup to beat Alabama. Trying to find the line right now. Georgia favored by 2.5.
2.5.
Yep. Over under 52 in this game. I am really surprised that Georgia's favored in this game. I don't understand why you would favor the Bulldogs after Alabama dominated this team a month ago. Can you make sense of that for me? Because I don't get it.
I really can't. I don't. I mean, Georgia 9-5 against the spread. Alabama 8-6 against the spread. It's not like there's anyone that favors that really by a significant margin. Both pretty decent against the spread. I mean, I can't make sense of having the number three favorite over the number one. But you know what? I will take right now is Bama plus 2.5, winning in a tight one. Maybe 4, maybe 5. I think this is going to be a defensive battle. I like Alabama plus 2.5. Life's too short to bet the under, though. Give me the over 52 right now.
Wow. Okay.
I also want the over at 52. That's what I want, and we will see how close I was on that one. But that's my bet. If you're a bet man, and you are or woman, if you're a betting woman as well. And you are in a state where it's legal to sports bet. That's what I'm taking right now. Bama plus 2.5 and the over at 52.
You know, I'm very perplexed that Georgia's favored in this game. I would go with you. The Alabama plus 2.5. I think they would cover that and get that. Here's the thing with Bama. If Georgia's going to win this game, in my mind, they have to hold the Crimson Tide under 21 points. And I think their defense might be capable of doing that. But then is the Georgia offense capable enough of scoring 22 points against the Alabama defense? I just don't trust that.
Stetson Bennett doesn't have that gene for me.
I just don't trust that. Yeah. I don't trust that he's going to do that. You know who I trust to come up in the big game? Bryce Young. If you're telling me one of those guys is going to go win this game when his team needs it, well, my money's on Bryce Young. And I think against Cincinnati, they proved, not that Alabama needed to prove this, but they proved if they need to beat you on the ground, well, they could just beat you on the ground. They could run it for 300 yards if they need to. And they'll just take what they can get in the passing game with Bryce Young. So I think Alabama is well set up to win this game. I think the pressure is arguing, and we kind of talked about this the other day. I think the pressure is more on Georgia in this one, in my mind, because Georgia has to come out and they have to play better than they did a month ago.
Especially now that they're favored in this game, the pressure definitely is on. Yeah. You are a pressured, technically underdog because you are the lower ranked team in the nation, but your favorite, the pressure's on you now.
After the team beat you a month ago, the only loss you had all year, and the only time you looked human all year. I mean, you dominated everybody else. So, This should be a good one. This should be another classic. Monday night, January 10th, 5 p.m. Pacific kickoff on ESPN. If you're a college football fan or sports fan in general, you're probably watching it already. But it should be a good one. And perhaps next week we're celebrating a Crimson Tide victory. And Mitch, if that's the case, if the Crimson Tide win a championship, we get back on this podcast next week. I just want a thank you for putting together a beautiful college football matchmaker quiz that put you with Alabama, a team that could go and win back-to-back national championships.
I love it. Yes.
You could have gotten much worse teams, you know.
Can I have a request?
Sure.
I would love the Alabama fight song played at some point.
How about this? If Alabama wins the national championship on Monday, we're coming into the episode, not with the Sports Hour intro. We're coming in with the Alabama fight song. How about
Let's go.
That's a promise. Remember that, folks. That's what we're doing. So there you go. Mitch, that's it for the college football playoff. let's wrap up the campus tour with the player to know before the NFL draft, Mitch. And I haven't decided yet. I sort of started this and I don't know how long I plan on doing this up until the NFL draft. I don't know if I should be doing this weekly up until the draft, because then that's another like 12 or something players before the end of April. I don't know if there's enough interesting players to do. So I'm not going to make a decision. I'm not making a decision on if I'm going to continue this, but this is for sure happening until this week. I might do a couple more before the draft, but here you go. Maybe the last, could be more. I'm not committing further. I just wanted to mention that, but here we go. Player to know.
Very Brett Favre of you. Non-committal. I like it.
Exactly. I might retire. I might come back. Who knows? Just call me in a month. These are the players on the list already. If you haven't been paying attention, if you haven't been listening, Aiden Hutchinson, edge, Michigan, Malik Willis, quarterback, Liberty, Kayvon Thibodeau, edge, Oregon, Drake London, wide receiver, USC, Kenneth Walker, running back, Michigan State, Tyler Linderbaum, center, Iowa, Kenny Pickett, quarterback, Pitt, Devin Lloyd, linebacker from Utah, Desmond Ridder, the quarterback from Cincinnati, Ahmad Sauce Gardner, the cornerback from Cincinnati, who, by the way, officially declared for the draft, and in his entire college football career, three seasons as a starter, never gave up a touchdown. Didn't give up single touchdown in his entire college football career as a college football corner. That is just absurd.
The next Richard Sherman.
Is just an insane stat. So there you go. That was the latest on the list. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the newest player to know before the NFL draft. And this is a guy near and dear to my heart. I've been waiting for him to officially declare, as there was still a possibility he could come back and play in 2022. But he has made it official. BYU running back Tyler Allgeier sent it off to the NFL. And Mitch, I love this kid. One, he is a fantastic story. Tyler Allgeier, under-recruited from Fontana, California, came to BYU as a walk-on, worked overnight shifts at Walmart for the first couple years at BYU before he earned his scholarship spot. When he came to BYU, he was a running back. He moved to linebacker. Basically, the entire 2019 season played at linebacker for BYU because they'd had injuries. They needed him. At the end of the season, they had had so many injuries to the running back room that he actually switched back to running back and played running back in their bowl game in 2019 before earning the starting job in 2020. And the last couple years has just put on a show for the Cougars. This past season had 1,600 rushing yards and 23 touchdowns. He was top five in all of college football in rushing yards. He was tied for the most rushing touchdowns in college football at 23. Last season, he averaged 7.5 yards per rush, 1,100 yards on the season, and 13 touchdowns in 2020. He's setting all kinds of records at BYU, including the single season rushing yard record, the single season, he was second in rushing touchdowns. He was first in rushing attempts. BYU history. These are all single season records. He has been incredible, earned his way to where he's at now. And is off to the NFL. Mitch, he is the type of player that fits well in this modern NFL. BYU runs a wide zone sort of run game. That's the offense. And that's that Shanahan style that a lot of teams employ in the NFL. So a back that fits that. And what makes Tyler Allgeier so special, in my opinion, is when he gets into that open space, that second level, because he has a power that he runs with, a broken tackle machine at 5'11", 220, a solid guy, solid runner. But he has a burst, an unexpected burst that defenders don't anticipate when they see him running. And he blows past guys that don't anticipate the type of speed that he has. I'm excited to see how he tests potentially at the NFL Combine or at his pro day for BYU. Because if he puts up impressive numbers there, I could see Tyler Allgeier being one of the top running backs in this class, a top 50 pick potentially. I think right now you'd be looking third or fourth round for Tyler Allgeier, but the pre-draft process could do him justice. And he's the type of hardworking guy and the type of guy that's had to earn his way that I think NFL teams are going to fall in love with. So watch some Tyler Allgeier tape. He says he models his game after Nick Chubb and Marshawn Lynch.
Those were actually two names that actually did come to mind for me, Nick Chubb and Marshawn Lynch. The other one was Mark Ingram.
Yeah.
A guy that's great between the tackles, but when he gets to the second level, he pushes a button and he hits the boosters and he actually breaks away. I actually had no idea because I actually watched this UAB game. I had no idea he was a linebacker before being a running back. Like, he was recruited as a linebacker. He was kind of unsure where he was going to play when he walked on at BYU. But yeah, Ingram, Lynch, Chubb, those guys that run great between the tackles, and man, yeah, they turn the switch on, they hit a button. Something happens when they get to second level and they're able to break away. Super impressive. He seems like a Kyle Shanahan, San Francisco 49er type of guy too. You know, that seems like a system that he would fit really well in. I hope for his sake that's not the case, because I think he could be a lead back type of guy. And if he goes to San Francisco, he's going to be splitting time with 17 other
sure.
guys. So
that is true. They'll use anybody in San Francisco.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of reason to be excited about a guy like Tyler Allgeier coming
up. Yeah, and I'm very intrigued at the fit that he has and what sort of team. I know a lot of BYU fans see the natural fit with the Jets as they run a Kyle Shanahan offense. It's the reason why they drafted Zach Wilson, who was familiar with that scheme, and obviously if he gets to turn around and hand it to his former teammate, all the better there. My favorite fit for Allgeier, and it has been all season, is the Seahawks. The Seattle Seahawks need a powerful runner to take the load off of Russell Wilson, whether it is Russell Wilson next year or they move in a different direction. They need a more consistent running back and they need to bring a new name into that. And I think Tyler Allgeier would fit that organization perfectly. I think that's the type of guy, the type of person that they would want in there, and a guy that is probably gonna be a pretty good running back, can make up for some offensive line weaknesses with his ability to break tackles and pick up extra yardage. So that is the name to watch this week. Tyler Allgeier, her running back, BYU, a name, a guy I expect to rise on draft boards throughout the early draft process. But Mitch, that's it for the campus tour. And we're going to take a break here, hit a mid-roll. And when we come back, it'll be all NFL reacting to week 17 in the NFL, taking a glance at the playoff picture and our quick picks for week 18. So stick around and we'll be right back. Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening, but if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back in to the Sports Hour with Mitchmo and Dallin. I hope you enjoyed your little break there. We're ready for a part two. Part two of this podcast coming up, all NFL. We got a little bit of week 17 recap, and we got to look at this playoff picture, Dallin, because I'll tell you what, the NFC seems pretty cut and dry. Who's getting in? Who has the possibility of getting in? What teams are going to be there at the end of week 18? But the AFC is a mess. We got to figure something out, and I think that you and I have figured it out after talking this through, and we'll get into that through this whole segment.
Yes, it'll be quite the week 18 ahead as we monitor the teams fighting for playoff spots. But let's start with a recap of week 17, highlighting a handful of games that had the biggest playoff implications. And let's start with arguably the best game of the weekend, the Bengals and the Chiefs, with the Bengals getting it done over the Chiefs, 34-31, potentially costing the Chiefs the number one seed in the AFC. Right now, it would go to the Titans, and if the Titans win in week 18, they will be the number one seed. So Cincinnati wins this game secures the AFC North. They are the winners of their division. Mitch, neither of us would have, would have believed that in the beginning of the season if you told us that the Cincinnati Bengals were going to win the AFC North this year. I mean, you had the Browns, you had the Ravens, you even had the Steelers, who were 12-4 last year, despite being an awful team. I mean, crazy what the Bengals have done. They win this game after falling behind early to Patrick Mahomes. Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, incredible games. I mean, the Bengals are legit, and they're in the playoffs, and they're going to be the team. They might be the team, the AFC, I want to face the least of anybody right now. I mean, they are playing at a really high level. This is crazy.
You know, they have me chanting, who they? Who they think gonna beat them Bengals? I mean, this team is so legit. I mean, not only did they take the Kansas City Chiefs down the wire, but they beat them. They beat them. Joe Burrow, I want to give you an insane statistic, Dallin. You ready for this?
Yes.
Joe Burrow has nearly 1,000 passing yards in the last 2 weeks, 971 passing yards and 8 touchdowns in the last 2 weeks. He did that, by the way, second half of this game, being hobbled.
Yeah.
Being hobbled. The only time he wasn't on the field was when they were taking a knee to kick that game-winning field goal. And they clocked it there at the end, which was smart, by the way, Gib, without using the timeout. You know, they actually, Joe Burrow is the toughest player in the NFL now. The Bengals are legit. Ja'Marr Chase is a top 10 wide receiver in the league. Joe Mixon has COVID, which sucks. But you know what? This team is so legit that going into the playoffs, you're absolutely right. I don't want to face this team. I do not want to see this team right now.
That's a great stat, Mitch, on the last two games for Burrow. In this game, he had 446 passing yards, 4 touchdowns, 30 of 39 passing for Burrow. And his former teammate, Ja'Marr Chase, offensive rookie of the year, hands down, 11 receptions, 266 yards, and 3 touchdowns. I mean, he's been great all season, but this was just the cherry on top. If there's any doubt he was winning offensive rookie of the year, he erased that down in this game against the Chiefs. And Mitch, Joe Burrow should be a legitimate MVP candidate, an MVP finalist. In my mind, it is Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Joe Burrow. That's who it comes down to me. Anybody else other than those three, I'm not with it. I legit think, I don't know if Joe Burrow should win it. I'm not saying he should win it, but he should be top three. That's how good he's been, and that's how strong he's ending this season. This is a completely unexpected, and what makes it so special, Mitch, is that he is elevating the players around him. Their offensive line is garbaggio. It's bad.
They're bad.
I think he was sacked 6 times in this game, but you wouldn't know it looking at the freaking stat sheet. I mean, they won the game despite that. He is making the offensive line better because of his pocket presence, his ability to find the open passer, stay in the pocket, make the plays, extend the plays. That is what he was able to do at LSU. It's what he's been able to do this season. And a full season of Joe Burrow has proven why he was the number one pick, why the Bengals took him number one overall in the 2020 NFL draft. And he has had a fantastic season. Congrats to the Bengals on winning the AFC North. For the Chiefs here, it's a tough loss. They've won the AFC West. They're in the playoffs. As I said, it probably ruins their chances of winning. Now the Titans would need to lose, and the Chiefs would need to win, and they could win the number one seed in the AFC. But likely takes them out of it because of this loss here. I don't take anything out of this for the Chiefs other than the Chiefs of the Chiefs, like. They'll be fine. This defense is porous, but it has been all year. The only shot the Chiefs have of winning another Super Bowl is having an offensive explosion, which we know they're capable of. But as far as this game, I don't take anything away for that. Both these teams should be resting their starters heading into the playoffs. No need to play next week when your fate is determined. You are already in. You've won your division. Nothing else to worry about.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the Chiefs at all. But I can't speak enough on Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah.
I think there's one person I would put above him of those top three that you mentioned as MVP candidates. That's Jonathan Taylor. I think that Jonathan
Interesting.
Taylor,
okay.
The 1,700 yards with some room to fudge around and maybe – Yeah, I think they're going to have to use him because this week, because they're in, you know, they could be knocked out.
Yeah, they got to win to get in. Yeah.
If he has a big game, you're talking about a 20 plus touchdown, 2000 yard guy. I think you have to put him in conversation with Aaron Rodgers. It's Aaron Rodgers' award to lose at this point. I think
it's probably more Tom Brady. If you look statistically, Brady has the better stats. And now Rodgers, and this has been the Rodgers of late, is it's the ultra efficiency of Rodgers. He doesn't have the passing yard numbers. He doesn't throw, you know, but he is ultra efficient. He turns the ball over. I think he's only turned the ball over six interceptions this year. Two of them came in the very first game of the season, right? Like against the Saints. So, that's what's going to win Rodgers the award, being the number one seed in the NFC, best record in the NFL, and being ultra efficient at quarterback. But Brady, I think, arguably has the more flashy records. It'll just depend on voters. Do you want to vote Rodgers to win back-to-back MVPs? Do you want to give it to Tom Brady the year after he wins a Super Bowl? Or do you want to give it to a new guy like Joe Burrow or a position player like Taylor and or Cooper Kupp, who's also having an all-time season for a wide receiver? So it is curious. It seems interesting, Mitch, that with just a week left in this season, I don't really know who's going to win the MVP. So usually at this point, it's pretty clear it's this guy's award. I don't really feel that.
I mean, Tom Brady is 10 points higher on his quarterback, Aaron Rodgers is 10 points higher on his quarterback rating, has thrown 8 fewer interceptions, but 1,000 less yards. Sure. So there is that.
And Brady has more touchdowns. Is that correct?
40 to 35.
So pretty
close, yeah. But
40 touchdowns is pretty significant, though. And
but that's,
you know,
yeah, that's a big benchmark.
That's a right. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. That's a number. You see that and you're like, wow, that's pretty, you know, that's impressive.
Right. But you're right. Since week one, Aaron Rodgers has only thrown 2 interceptions.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, and I saw something crazy where, like, against NFC opponents over the last 4 years, he has like 56 touchdowns and 0 interceptions.
Wow.
Against NFC North opponents.
Yeah.
Like it's
interdivision. He owned the Bears, he meant it, you know?
Yeah, we lying. Don't have to keep talking that's about him owning the Bears. Lie. We all know that he owns the Bears. We don't have to talk about it. But, you know, yeah, no, this was we're getting way off track.
Got him the MVP, which is fun. And this is great, Mitch, because we're going to transition into Jonathan Taylor's team here.
Yeah.
Indianapolis Colts. As you mentioned, they are in a win or go home situation. Next Sunday, they'll be facing the Jacksonville Jaguars, but they lost this past week to the Las Vegas Raiders, who kept their season alive and set up a Sunday night showdown with the Los Angeles Chargers for a win. And you're in playoff hopes alive at Allegiant Stadium on Sunday. So in this game, Vegas gets it done 23-20. Derek Carr leads the team back in this game. The Raiders are just somehow getting it done. It seems strange. It's not ugly. It's not pretty. It's really ugly. They still can't run the ball like at all. But even without Darren Waller and even without, you know, Henry Ruggs and some of the weapons that we saw that made this team so good early in the season, the Raiders are hanging around and are a game away from being in the playoffs. I'm very surprised they're at this point. I mean, I guess I expected them to be about 9 or 10 wins. This is about where I had them beginning of the season. But with the way that the season has progressed, you know, John Gruden, Henry Ruggs, et cetera, everything to happen to the Raiders this year. I'm shocked that they're still at this point, but a very important win for Vegas here in this one. Credit to their defense, who held the Colts to just 20 points and held Jonathan Taylor to just 108 rushing yards. That is a success against Jonathan Taylor. He's like the best running back in the league this year. And they made Carson Wentz look really bad. This was not a good game for Carson Wentz. Very limited for him coming off the COVID list this week. So a big win for the Raiders, keeping their playoff hopes alive.
I mean, first of all, applaud to Rich Bisaccia, the interim head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, for stepping in and doing the job that he has amidst all the drama. If we're not talking about a John Gruden scandal, if we're not talking about a Henry Ruggs scandal, I think this is probably 11 or 12 win team. I mean, this team was playing well when all this stuff started to go down. Yeah, they just find a way to get it done. And you know what? You don't have to win pretty. A W is a W, right? which is why I'm kind of excited to see them if they make a, if they make a wild card, you know, a wild card game. I'm kind of excited to see what happens with that. Because
feels like honestly, it's either going to we'll be a beautiful game or they're just going to get smoked by whoever they play.
Well, and here, and here's the thing is Derek Carr has in the past, though, in the regular season stepped up on big occasions and he's had big games when he needed to have big games. But the last time that they were in this situation where they were possibly playoff bound or in the playoffs, we didn't get to see him because he was hurt.
Right.
He broke his leg in the last game of the year. We had Connor Cook to look forward to.
That just still hurts me that the 12-4 Raiders, who were a legit Super Bowl contender that
they
year,
were so had to, good,
had to lose to the, I think it was like the Texans with Connor Cook. That's ridiculous.
They lost to TJ Yates, I'm pretty sure, in the Texans. That's gross. It was a bad loss. That was with the Jack Del Rio years. I mean, that was a great team. But you know what? They're kind of excited. If they make it in, I think they're kind of sneaky. Carson Wentz, to me, didn't look that bad. I mean, he threw 148 yards, but he only had 9 incompletions. He had the touchdown. Jonathan Taylor, you know, did what Jonathan Taylor does. You know, he ran for 5.5 to carry for 108 yards and a touchdown. The Raiders, I think, just played pretty sound defense. I think that we've seen an uptick in this Raiders defense. They have found a way to be successful under Rich Bisaccia. You know, he hasn't been headed in the right direction for the short term. Maybe they make us run to a divisional game if they sneak into the playoffs. But, I mean, not a whole lot of way to take away from this game other than what the implications are going to be in week 18.
Right. Yeah, really, it's that the Raiders kept their playoff hopes alive and good for them. They have their remaining persistent and have a shot on Sunday to secure their playoff berth. For the Colts, I will say, Mitch, you know, I expected the Colts to be a playoff team this year. They will be a playoff team. I would be shocked if they lost to Jacksonville, a Jacksonville team that has no motivation to win a game at this point. Certainly not very capable of winning a game, even when they are motivated. And the Colts are obviously extremely motivated to win a game because if they win, they're in the playoffs. So I would expect the Colts to win on Sunday and make the playoffs. My concern for the Colts in the playoffs is how one-dimensional they are offensively. They are fully reliant on the offensive line and the run game. And if the run game isn't going to work, Carson Wentz is not good enough and their pass catchers are not good enough to beat anybody. So if you're a team that's facing the Colts in the wild card weekend, it's simple. You sell out, stop Jonathan Taylor on the run game. And you say, Carson Wentz, good luck. If you're going to beat us, you're going to beat us. And that would be concerning if I was a Colts fan, if I was rooting for the Colts in the playoffs, because that is, you never want to be that one dimensional where you're so easy to shut down. If you figure out one thing, you have no answer for that. It feels like at this point in the season, that's where the Colts are. And that would be a concern for me as far as their future goes.
Just for the sake of having a chat, Carson Wentz is unreliable in what way?
I think he's been good this year. I don't think he's been great. Yeah. I think he's been good this year, but he is not going to, I don't believe in him to go win a playoff game. Carson, we need you to throw the ball 35 to 40 times, not turn the ball over more than twice, right? Two or three times, which is prone to do, and go win us a game when we can't run the ball. I just don't trust him to do that. I don't think he's proven to do that this year. And even at the end of his Philly stint, I think he is a good enough quarterback to quarterback a solid playoff team at this point if everything is going well around him. My fear is that they're easy to beat. That's what I'm saying. But if the run game's going, they could beat anybody, and that is going to be the strength for the Colts. They can run it down your throat. They're going to have a shot in any playoff game.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could ask him to go take care of the ball. He's only had 6 interceptions this entire year.
Sure.
And both of those occasions, you're correct, or he's only thrown a interception in, was it 4 of those games, and in two of those instances he threw 2 times
multiple picks. Right.
So you're right, yes, he can make the mistakes, but isn't that any other quarterback in the NFL?
Sure. Of course. But there's guys that you trust, like a Derek Carr. You would trust Derek Carr to go win you a game, would you not? I would.
Because Derek Carr can throw for 500 yards on any given week.
Right.
When the play calling is correct. So of course. Carson Wentz is, you know, he's a victim of circumstance right now. I think that you have an 1800 yard rusher. Of course you're going to give him the ball.
Sure.
with a
and that's their clear strength. And that's, and again, their pass catchers, like Michael Pittman's had a great season, second season for Michael Pittman here, right? But he's still a young player. And like, other than that, who do they have? A washed up T.Y. Hilton and Mo Alley Cox, right? Like, their best receiver is probably Nyheim Hines, and he's a running back. So it's not like he's got a ton of options to, and that's why I say the combination of him as a quarterback and the player, the pass catchers around him, is what limits them as an offense. So again, we'll see. I expect them to make the playoffs again with them playing Jacksonville this week, but it'll be a tough test depending on what their matchup is in the first round. Mitch, let's move on to another game. This one in the NFC, the Arizona Cardinals getting the dub over the Dallas Cowboys 25-22. Mitch, I thought this game was interesting because it felt like the Cardinals had been fading over the last couple of weeks. They got off to such a hot start, right? They were the last undefeated team. I believe it was like 8-0 at least they got to before they finally lost. They had a decent, you know, decent win streak. And it just felt like the last couple of weeks had been flat. Kyler and this team, they'd suffered through injuries. Things hadn't really been going that well. Their defense, which had been playing really well to start the season, had started to fade. And you look at a game against Cowboys offense that's really freaking good. I didn't really expect the Cardinals to be able to pull this off, let alone holding the Cowboys to 22 points. Very impressed by the performance for the Cardinals defense here, getting this win and a big win that keeps them alive in this in the NFC West race. Right, they're still alive in this with the Rams, a potential to win their division. Obviously locked into the playoffs, but they had lost three straight games, Mitch, heading into this one. Lost to the Rams, lost to the Lions, lost to the Colts. A must win in week 17 comes at the right time for them to gain some momentum heading into the postseason.
Yeah, I thought that Kyler was really the one fading here. I mean, he had some bad weeks there, you know, through that like kind of 5 week stretch.
Right.
And they did, you know, they showed out. They showed out against a really tough Cowboys defense, I think headed by Micah Parsons, who has been looking fantastic all year. Defensive rookie of the year in my mind. That's a no brainer. But yeah, they showed out. They did what they were supposed to do. They kept themselves in the conversation as far as one of the better teams in the NFC. Definitely not the best team in the NFC, I don't think, anymore. A statement that I made just a few weeks ago. But, you know, this is a team that's been fading, and I think they needed a good quality win for morale going into week 18, going into the playoffs. They needed a good quality win against the Dallas Cowboys. As far as the Cowboys go, I'm not too worried. Dak played well. The defense didn't show up. They
couldn't run the ball at all. That is concerning to me.
That they still can't figure out how to run the football, which is exactly where I was going next. Which goes to my next point of, I think this offseason, they need to make a decision between Zeke Elliott and Tony Pollard. And I think the correct decision is Tony Pollard. I think that Zeke needs to go at the end of the year. He needs to go find greener pastures to play the rest of his career. And Tony Pollard needs to be the guy. But that's clearly the guy that they like more. Granted, don't look at the carries that happened this week. Zeke had 9, Tony Pollard had 3, but I feel like that they would be more committed to Tony Pollard because he complements Dak's game a hell of a lot better than Zeke does.
Yeah, and Tony Pollard, a factor of the pass game, 3 carries, but also 3 receptions for 49 yards, 3rd on the team in receiving yards in the game. So obviously he brings that element that Zeke doesn't as much. The hard thing with Zeke is just the contract. Can you get out of that contract? How much dead money are you eating, or can somebody take that on? Does anybody want to take that on? It's a tough spot to be in when you pay a quarterback that much. Mitch, for the Cardinals, you know, you mentioned they needed a win for morale. I completely agree with you too. Keep in mind here, they're still without DeAndre Hopkins, still without James Conner. I mean, those are two big pieces for them this year that they've relied on, two of their best offensive players that they are still without. Hopefully they'll get them back in time for the playoffs, but important to win without them. I worry about the Cardinals' run game, which started off the season well, has really faded in the second half. Again, when it comes to the playoffs, you don't want to make yourself one-dimensional. So can Chase Edmonds, can James Conner get healthy? Can that be enough in the playoffs to help Kyler Murray in the pass offense? We'll see. But obviously both these teams headed to the playoffs Cowboys have secured the NFC East, no matter what happens this week. Cardinals, again, still have a chance in the NFC West, but it will be, you know, slim chances here. I believe they're behind the Rams at this point due to tiebreakers. An important win for Arizona. Just what you would want to see before the end of the season if you're the Cardinals. Another good week against the Seahawks this week, and maybe you set yourself up well for wild card weekend.
Yeah, old Mo is a fickle thing. You got to have the momentum going into the playoffs, and a big win like this definitely favors Arizona moving forward.
Absolutely. Mitch, final game here. We want to talk about the Monday Night Football game. Not for the game itself. Pittsburgh gets it done in Heinz Field over the Browns, 26-14. The Browns were eliminated from the playoffs on Sunday. Obviously, with the loss, win loss didn't really matter. They fall to 7-9. Pittsburgh still alive in the playoff race at 8-7-1. They would need the Colts to lose, and then they would need to beat the Ravens. And you know, it's they're going to need some help. They're definitely at the bottom of that stack, but still alive in this. What was significant about this game, Mitch, was this was Big Ben's farewell at Heinz Field, his final home game as a Pittsburgh Steeler here, barring a crazy set of circumstances in which they make the playoffs and then inevitably host by not being, I don't even know if that's possible. Can they even not be the 7 seed? I think they'd have to be the 7 seed. So this is the last game at Heinz Field ever for Big Ben. He was not necessarily good in this game. 24 of 46 for 123 yards. When have you ever seen a stat line where a guy attempted 46 passes and had 123 passing yards?
It's the most Big Ben stat line of all time.
This is what he's become at the end of his career. It's worked for the Steelers for the most part, right? I mean, they were, 8-8, 9-7 in 2019. Last year, obviously 12-4. This year, 8-7-1 headed into week 18 with a shot at the playoffs. Still have not had a losing season under Mike Tomlin. What were your thoughts on this game? Big Ben, I guess, as he sort of wraps up his Pittsburgh career here, any thoughts on him?
I mean, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer in my mind, 2-time Super Bowl champion. It's a special moment for him. I mean, this is one of those iconic fields, the big ketchup bottle, as Chris Berman used to call it, Heinz Field, his final game there. And this is where I have my first of my two Pit of Misery entries for this week. The media that surrounded Big Ben at the end of that game, when he's trying to have his final moment at Heinz Field, you're going into the Pit of Misery, dilly dilly.
Billy,
look, I don't know. I'm sure I'm not the only person that felt this way, but this is a guy that has given his body and soul to the game. I mean, this is a broken down guy, right? Played through several injuries, has given his heart, soul, body, health to this team, to this organization, to this game. Let him have his moment. For him to be instantly surrounded by 50 paparazzi members trying to get that picture. And I understand that's the media's job. Like, that's their job to get that shot. But we got to have some respect for the guy and the player to let him have his moment. And it just seemed to ruin it for me. I mean, even when he's walking down the tunnel with his family, his wife and his kids at the end of the game, and you got paparazzi up in your face. I mean, this just, it's sad and it seems sick for those media members to rob him of that moment. And I feel like he was robbed of having that special moment that he deserves to have at his last home game as a Steeler. So they're in the pit of misery probably for a long time, because you know what, even though we put out a sports podcast, I don't really like the sports media a whole lot when it comes to professional sports, especially the photographers, because they're annoying and they suck. So dilly dilly. You robbed Big Ben of his final moment at Heinz Field. Congratulations. You're a scumbag.
Yeah. You know, I watched the end of the game, and the moment that stuck out to me, cause I'm right there with you. He walks towards, he's standing on the field for a while. He talks to, I think, Lisa Salters or whoever the sideline is after the game, talk for quite a bit. And then he sort of walks towards the bench And he looks at the crowd and he sort of has a moment where nobody in the crowd is left. You can see the cameras. They're sort of following around. Nobody is left. They're just sitting there chanting, thank you, Ben. They're cheering for him. They're just wanting to revel in the moment. They don't want to leave that moment. And he looks out at the crowd and he's waving. He's putting his hands up and they're cheering him on. And it's such a cool moment. And then you notice the 50 people around him with a camera and a phone in his face trying to capture it. And it was just off-putting, you know? It's like can we just not let this guy have like a minute or two to just be there? Like, let's just have that moment. Let him have it. Let the crowd have it. Have the TV camera around so ESPN can capture it for those watching. And everybody else, take your pictures 20 feet away. Because guess what? He's going to speak to the media after the game. And you're going to be able to get all your close-up pictures then. You know, you're going to get your opportunities to talk to the players because that's, you know, how it works. I'm in the media. We have, you know, given times, and yes, you want to capture moments. Yes, you want to, you know, be the first to have that.
I just didn't like that.
No, and that's fine. And again, like, that's their job. That's what they're asked to do. It just sucks that that's what they're asked to do, is basically ruin that moment for everybody else to capture the moment for their publication or for their Twitter feed or for whatever it is. You know what I mean? So it does kind of put a bummer on that, you know, at the end of the game. So I hope I'm with you here. I'm with you here. You know,
I feel like there needs
it's your pit of misery too. You're the warden, you know?
I am the leader of this realm. I just feel like that there needs to be, I don't know how the NFL does it, but some sort of restriction for instances like that.
Just let him have the moment and then get your picture. But even then,
like,
you know?
Like the NFL could say, or the team could say,
no.
Hey, look, guys, we know that this probably is going to be Ben's last home game. We want you to be 20 feet away.
Right. He'll be available after the game.
Give him his space.
You can take your pictures from a distance on the field, but. Yeah, you know,
because whatever video is caught in that moment from whoever's broadcasting the game is going to be worth its weight in gold anyway. And then you could get it from there, you know?
Right.
So just let the man have his moment.
I feel it. I feel it.
Speaking of pit of misery entries.
Yeah.
I think we have a repeat entry. I'm pretty sure this guy's been in here before, but Antonio Brown, welcome back to the pit of misery. Dilly dilly.
A former Steeler. Speaking of Big Ben and the Steelers,
this guy, takes the pads off, storms off the field. They wind up winning the game. So I don't know what he was so upset about. Like, he was just done playing football, I guess.
It was reported. Apparently he had claimed he had an injury that he didn't want to play through. And the coaches essentially told him, called BS on him and said, well, you've been playing this whole game. So if you don't want to get back, if you refuse to play in this game, you're off the team. And so he decided to be off the team and took his shit and left. I don't know if you've seen the video from the Uber driver who picked him up at MetLife and drove him home. That guy was so excited. That was the funniest shit. It's crazy.
Yeah, and then he wound up courtside at a basketball game.
The Nets game.
I mean,
didn't ever leave New York. He was still there.
Guy just needs to leave football.
What a mess.
He needs to be done. I hope that he gets the help that he needs, because this guy obviously needs help. But, man, if you're any GM or owner in the NFL, you can't possibly think that adding this guy to your roster is a good idea anymore. You can't.
I guess not, but money talks. If the fifth
time that he's had an absolute breakdown isn't proof enough, then I don't know what to tell you.
Froze his feet, and that is, and still he ended his career.
The man has a cryotherapy addiction. Okay.
His final moment in the NFL likely is walking off the field shirtless on the field of play while play is going on. Like, he walks through the field of play. Apparently the security almost tackled him because they thought he was a streaker. They did not know he was Antonio Brown, because why would an NFL player be on the field without any clothes on, basically, in the middle of the game? It is an absurd way to end. And again, I thought Tom Brady spoke very poignantly about this after the game. He talked about how much it meant to him to have him on and how much they did for him and his concern for AB. clearly this guy is not okay, because that is not normal behavior. So I hope if there is some sort of mental health issues going on with him in his life, that he does get that help that he needs. But clearly he's not made for the NFL right now. He's no longer mentally capable of performing in this league and handling what it takes. And he, for his betterment, should step away from the league. And I hope that teams don't let him back in. Don't drink the Kool-Aid one more time and think, but we could do it this time. We just need him for 3 games. We just need him for no. Let him be. Don't, please let him be away, because clearly I think he needs it.
Well, you saw what happened to the Bucks. Oh, we just need him for 4 games. Turns into another contract, which turns into the meltdown. So, we can't. Yep.
Crazy. Well, dilly dilly to Antonio Brown. Hopefully his time in the pit of misery helps him, get his life straight.
I don't know. He might be a lifer. We'll find out.
Oh, man. All right, Mitch, that's it for the week 17 recap. Let's take a brief look at the playoff picture before we jump into our week 18 quick picks. Let's start in the NFC, which is the more clear picture of any. Right now in the NFC, the Green Bay Packers are locked in as the number one seed, 13-3. No matter what happens, they are getting the bye in week 1, and everything runs through Lambeau in the NFC race to the Super Bowl, which is huge for the Packers, huge for their advantage playing in that weather in Lambeau. They have been the number one seed before, and it hasn't necessarily helped them get to the playoffs the last couple of years. So not necessarily like a certainty there, but obviously that's the kind of advantage you want when you have Aaron Rodgers and you play in Wisconsin in January, right? Not a bad thing to secure there. The Rams right now, a game up on Arizona in the NFC West at 12-4, Tampa Bay 12-4, locked up in the NFC South. The Dallas Cowboys are locked into the NFC East at 11-5, and the Arizona Cardinals at 11-5, locked into a wild card spot. In fact, locked into the 5 seed. So the Cardinals would be the 5 seed and play the 4 seed, which right now would be a rematch of last week, Dallas and Arizona. So that could be pretty interesting in the coming week. The Philadelphia Eagles are locked into the playoffs at 9-7. They are currently the 7 seed because the Niners share their record and own the tiebreaker. But the Niners, if they were to lose this week, would drop out of the playoffs, and the Eagles are in no matter what. So there is one playoff spot left in the NFC. Right now, the Niners are 9-7, and the New Orleans Saints are 8-8. Saints need the Niners to lose to get in. Niners win, and they're in at the 6th seed. It's pretty much as simple as that in the NFC, really. The NFC West is technically up for grabs, as I mentioned, between Arizona and the Rams, but you would need the Rams to lose and Arizona to win. But other than that, everybody's kind of where they're at. Some of the seeding might move around as far as, the top 4 seeds. But other than that, it's really up to the Niners and the Saints on who's getting in.
Yeah, the goal for the week is don't lose. So I think that we're going to see a lot of defensive football being played, a lot of conservative football. Just don't lose and you're in. So I think that, we'll probably see a little bit more trying to win from the New Orleans Saints, because they don't have that kind of loss to give where the Niners might. If the Saints lose and the Niners lose, the Niners would get into that spot. So, it seems pretty clear cut who we're going to see. Obviously we got to determine that 6 and 7 seed. If I'm a betting man, give me the Niners here. Give me the Niners to get in to that final spot.
Certainly will be interesting to see how this plays out. The AFC, Mitch, much more complicated right now. The Tennessee Titans at 11-5 own the number one seed in the AFC. As I mentioned, they are ahead of the Kansas City Chiefs, who are also 11-5 because of a head-to-head win. So in order for the Chiefs to earn the number one seed, they would need a Tennessee loss and obviously Kansas City win on Sunday. But both those teams are locked into their into the playoffs and locked in their respective divisions. Tennessee winning the AFC South, Kansas City winning the AFC West. The Cincinnati Bengals, as we mentioned, winners of the AFC North at 10-6. They are locked into the playoffs, locked into their division. Buffalo and New England are both locked into the playoffs at 10-6, though the division is yet to be determined. Buffalo currently leads the division, has the tiebreaker there. Both teams at 10-6. So still a chance for New England to win the division, still a chance for Buffalo. But right now those teams would match up in the first round of the playoffs as the 4 and 5 seeds. That would be quite the third matchup of the season for the Bills and the Patriots in the first round of the playoffs. Sign me up for that. That sounds like that'd be pretty fun.
Yeah, that'd be a banger of a matchup.
Yeah,
a of a
matchup. I love that. And then after that, Mitch, the final two playoff spots, the final two wild card spots, there are five teams still fighting, still with a chance to win. As we've talked about already, a number of these teams. Indianapolis right now, the 6th seed at 9-7. Chargers right now, the 7th seed at 9-7. Vegas also at 9-7. Then you have Pittsburgh at 8-7-1. And Baltimore at 8-8, mathematically not eliminated from the playoffs. So basically, this is how it goes, Mitch. As we mentioned before, if the Colts win, they're in. Easy enough. They play the Jags. If they win, they secure the number 6 seed. And then essentially that final spot would go to the winner of the Chargers and the Raiders who play on Sunday night. Basically, the Chargers and Raiders are in. One of the winner of that game is going to be in regardless of what happens to the Colts or anybody else for that matter. Teams like Pittsburgh and Baltimore who play each other would obviously need to win their matchup and then would have to rely on the Colts then losing to Jacksonville to have a shot. But essentially we're looking at the Colts and the winner of Vegas and LA. But Mitch, there's an interesting scenario where both the Raiders and the Chargers can get into the playoffs.
Yes. Yes, there is. If the Colts were to lose to the Jags, Raiders and Chargers both hold the tiebreaker there, and they would, regardless of that matchup, they would both get in, which means it doesn't matter. The best case scenario for them is to tie because they wouldn't have the added loss to either one. So there would have to be a pregame agreement for them to essentially kneel out the rest of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. So
if I'm correct.
Yeah. So if the Colts were to lose, then as we mentioned, the winner of this game goes to the playoffs regardless. But if the Colts were to lose, then both these teams could make it if they tied their game on Sunday night. They would both then secure the 6 and 7 seeds. If you're those teams and you've seen the Colts lose earlier in the day, and you know that if you tie, you're both in, would you not rather, instead of playing a game and risking missing the playoffs, would you rather just kneel the whole game out, tie 0-0, and both walk merrily into the playoffs next week? It's a fascinating scenario that I just kind of hope the possibility happens just to like see what they would do about it. Could NFL franchises legitimately like decide we're not going to try to win and we know that you're not going to either? It's crazy. I don't know. But it's out there, and if that were to be the case, they could tie 0-0, and the Chargers and the Raiders make the playoffs, and that would be the logical thing to do, would just secure your path to the playoffs.
Could the rest of the league technically claim collusion because that was a predetermined outcome to the rest of the game, or is it like a, hey, you can game plan however the hell you want and just kneel it out, but when both teams do it, can the rest of the league go, hey, something's fishy here? Just for you both to claim this playoff spot.
It's crazy. It's fascinating. We've never seen something like this. And now, obviously, as we've mentioned a lot, the Colts are playing the Jaguars, right? So like there's a strong likelihood that the Colts are just going to win their game and move on and they won't have to, we won't even have to worry. We're not even going to see this.
Yeah.
But there is the possibility, and that's what makes this fun. So the AFC will be a fun playoffs to you know, watch on Sunday as this sort of shakes out. Obviously the NFC a bit more straightforward here, but Mitch, that's it for playoff pictures. So let's just jump into this. It's time for the week 18 quick picks. And Mitch, this is the final week of our NFL quick picks.
Yeah. I mean, this has been quite the quick pick season for us. The new added twist of the extra week. Dallin, I led most of the season. And then somewhere about mid-November, you started to draw it close, and we might have flopped a game lead back and forth. But come week 13, you gapped me. You gapped me by 5 games. And I started to get really nervous. My mediocrity was starting to bite me in the ass. I had to come back with some sort of strong performance, and I was really worried that I wasn't going to get there. Week 17 was the turning point here. I had a 14-2 week in week 16. Week 17, Dallin, you and I both 11-5. It is now a 2-game difference between us going into the final week, and I'm nervous, dude. I'm nervous.
Yes, it is do or die in week 18. It is tight, just 2 games separating. We haven't made a plan on what will happen if we like tie. I don't know. If we tie, we'll have to figure something out. We've never had a situation like that.
And look, let's remind everyone, what's the loser doing again?
The loser has to take over the Sports Hour guys TikTok for a month, 2 months, some sort of period of time.
They have to kind of catch up on the trends.
And
right?
You have to post, we're going to say at least 3 TikToks a week of trendy TikTok, the trendy dances, the ideas, whatever it is. We're getting viral on TikTok, and you have to commit to it for at least a month, 3 times a week. That's the loser. And neither of us are good at dancing.
No, and more incentive for me to get my bikini body back, because no one wants to see a fat guy that's not good at dancing.
So a lot at stake here for either of us here on these final picks. So, Mitch, let's jump right into it here. Week 18.
And we're doing these picks live, by the way.
Yes, we usually pick before. We'll send it picks to each other. We'll know, but we're just doing these. We're just going to do it live because it's the final week. It's do or die.
Bill O'Reilly, fuck it, we'll do a live.
Exactly. All right, so let's jump into it. Saturday, 2 games on Saturday. First of those, the Kansas City Chiefs headed to Mile High to take on the Denver Broncos. Kansas City 11-5, Denver 7-9. Kansas City fighting for a chance, still a chance to be the number one seed in the AFC. I say they get it done. 12-5 on the season for the Chiefs. Give me Kansas City.
Yeah, I think Kansas City does it as well. I think Kansas City gets this one done. I think that they get out front early, and we see a lot of benchings going on in the fourth quarter to save them. So give me Kansas City here. Following that, the second Saturday game, Dallas, they're leaving the Lone Star State to head over to the City of Brotherly Love to take on the other playoff-bound team, the Philadelphia Eagles. I think that if Dallas is smart, they take care of Dak, who's coming off the big injury this year. They take care of Dak. They take care of their running game. They take care of some defense. I like Philly in the upset at home to get it done, get to 10-7, and Dallas rests some key players going into the first round of the playoffs.
I'm right there with you, Mitch. I'm taking the Eagles in this game as well, because again, Dallas locked into the NFC East. Right now, their only sort of situation is they can maybe move to the 3 seed or the 4 seed. Not a huge difference there, really. So I think you'd rather take the health. And I just think the Eagles will probably be more motivated. So despite the fact that they're locked into the playoffs, they have seeding opportunities for them still. You want to avoid the 2 seed, you know, you don't want to be the 7. If you can move up to the 6, that's better. So, I've got the Eagles at home getting it done on Saturday night.
I know what you're doing.
I'm not. Listen,
you son of a bitch.
I'm gonna pick first sometimes, right?
You're right. You're right.
I wouldn't do that. That's cheap. I don't do that. I'm going for reals.
It was a great opportunity for me to call it, but you know, it's
I wouldn't do that. Okay.
I know, Mitch, you wouldn't. You're a man of honor.
Exactly. Sunday morning, AFC North, the Bengals 10-6 headed to the best city in Ohio, Cleveland, to take on the 7-9 Cleveland Browns. Mitch, Joe Burrow's not playing in this game. Joe Mixon's got COVID. Bengals are locked into their division. Not a lot of motivation to play this game. I believe that they will bench most of their starters. But I'm still going to pick the Bengals to win because this Browns team looks really, really bad right now. And I don't even know who they're playing. Baker's not playing in this game. Baker's already having surgery. His season's over. They're banged up themselves. So it's going to be Case Keenum against whoever the hell the backup is in Cincinnati. I have no idea who their backup is. I don't know, but I just feel like the Bengals are the better team. So I'm going to go with the Bengals in this one.
Is it not Lindley still?
Ryan Lindley.
Ryan Lindley.
Is it Lindley or Finn? Oh, okay.
I think that's it. Look. Yeah, I'm doing the same thing. I mean, Cleveland's bad, and you know, whoever's around Case Keenum, not a bag on Case Keenum. Case Keenum is a playoff quarterback at one point in his career, just banged up around him. Like this Cleveland Browns team has had a rough go of it. Give me Cincinnati in this game. Following that one, Green Bay, they're leaving the frozen tundra to head over to the warm and cozy dome over there at Ford Field in Detroit, where the Green Bay Packers will take on the Detroit Lions. Gimme Green Bay.
Going with the Packers.
No. Yeah, no. No, give me Detroit.
Going with the Lions.
Give me Detroit at home. Yeah, Amon-Ra St. Brown's has a huge game. Give me Detroit.
That's your reasoning. Amon-Ra St. Brown has a big game. Go Lions.
Guy's been clutch. What can I say?
Here's the thing. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers is not going to be playing this game. Not a lot of starters in the Packers will be playing this game. They're locked into the number one seed. They won't have to play. They can give their guys 2 weeks off before they have to play their playoff game. Why would you not take advantage of that and rest all of your starters, right? There's no reason to risk the injury. I've got the Lions in this game too. The Lions have been sneaky competitive all year. They've only won two games, but they've been competitive this whole season. And considering the Packers are going to play only backups in this game, I think the Lions are going to be motivated to win. Right now, they're not locked into the number one seed. The Jaguars have that because of the tie. So it's not like a win and you miss out on the number one pick or anything like that. Like they would need the Jags to win to have a shot at the number one pick. So I think Detroit's going to be motivated to win this game. I think the Lions get it done at Ford Field. I'm with you.
Amon-Ra St. Brown, 2024 Offensive Player of the Year.
Wow. Okay. Quite there. There you go. That's a take.
That's not going on the hill.
Mitch, another NFC North matchup here. Your Bears, 6-10, couple wins at the end of the season for Chicago, headed to Minneapolis inside their comfy, cozy dome to take on the 7-9 Minnesota Vikings. Mitch, I saw this team in person 2 weeks ago. It was snowing at Lumen Field. It was the third ever snow game in Seattle. When I watched freaking Nick Foles and the Bears beat the Seahawks. Bear Don, give me the Bears in this one. The Minnesota Vikings are in a bad spot. Zimmer's probably gone. They don't have much motivation to win. They've just trailed off at the end of this season. And the Bears have reeled off two straight. And Justin Fields is probably playing in this game. So give me the Bears.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Is it a question?
No.
Bear down. That's all I got to say. You know what? Send Matt Nagy out on a high note, get his third win in a row, and then fire his ass.
And then fire. You know, and then immediately after the game, say thanks for the three wins.
Make him feel really good. Give him a nice big bowl of Cheerios, then piss in it. Let Matt Nagy walk his way out with a piss full of, with a bowl of full of piss and Cheerios.
Don't even schedule his Uber. He's got to pull out the app and get his own Uber.
You know what? Do the same to Ryan Pace too. Get him out of there.
Two bowls of piss Cheerios, huh?
You know what? No, I want that guy from the Red Sox, that GM from the Red Sox that built that 04 team.
Epstein.
Yeah, I want Theo Epstein. I want Theo Epstein as the new GM of the Chicago Bears.
Well, okay.
That guy can build winners.
Theo Epstein and Jim Harbaugh, huh? That's your power combo.
Guy doesn't know. I don't know if the guy knows football or not, but he knows baseball and he knows how to build winners. Give me Theo Epstein and give me Jim Harbaugh. That's what I want.
He's going to be like, we're paying a quarterback. How much money? No, we got to cut him. They're like, guys, he's Justin Fields. He's a Pro Bowler. I don't know. We don't pay money. This is all about cutting salaries. And you know, you're like,
no, we got this double A catcher over there.
Yeah, exactly. This guy's got a hell of an arm. I'm sure he can play quarterback.
I mean, he's also a Chicago guy. He built the winner for the Cubbies in the.
That's true. There you go. There you go, Mitch. Jim Harbaugh, Theo Epstein, power duo in the NFL. Bears back to the Super Bowl. All right, what's up next, buddy?
Following that game, we have Washington. They are leaving the city's capital, hopefully for the last time as the football team, and we have a name for him next year.
February 2nd. February 2nd, the name is announced. They have announced the date. So in less than a month, we will know the new identity.
Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. But they are going to be taking on the Giants from the Big Apple, the New York Giants. Both teams not playoff bound. Part of me wants to take the Giants at home, but I think I'm going to take Washington on the road. I think this is a better team. They have nothing to play for. They're just playing for pride. And the Washington defense shows out. And yeah, the Giants offense looked really bad against the Bears. Okay. They looked really bad against the Bears last week. I think they continue to look bad against Washington this week. Give me the football team.
Mitch, to say they looked bad is a gross understatement. Mike Glennon had negative 10 passing yards. He had a lower, that's team yards. If you include sacks, they had negative 10 passing yards as a team. Mike Glennon had a lower PFF grade for the game than Nathan Peterman did in his 4 interception half that he played a couple years ago. The worst game of all time. Mike Glennon had a worse passing grade on Sunday than the GOAT Nathan Peterman in his most awful performance. That's how bad it is. There's no way in hell we can pick the Giants. We would be crazy to pick the Giants. I got a football team as well. Yeah. That's just nuts. I'm not picking that.
No.
How do I look like? A gabagool?
Hey, what are you, a gabagool? What are you, a gabagool? Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, that's all I got. Mitch, up next, the AFC South.
That was such a weird overreaction to what you just said.
Indianapolis Colts fighting for their playoff lives. They're headed to the swamps of Jacksonville. T-Law and the Jags looking to fall to 2-15. Mitch, there's no way in hell the Colts lose this game. I'm going on the hill for that one. There's no way the Colts miss the playoffs by losing to the 2-14 fired Urban Meyer halfway through the season ass having Jacksonville Jaguars. There's no way. They've won half of their games on another continent.
Hey, they're 1-0 in Europe, okay?
Urban Meyer's undefeated in England. I'm just saying. Give him some respect.
Oh, my God. Look, I would love to put you on the hill for that statement, but I'm there with you, and I don't think that's one that's, like, outrageous to stand on that hill and die on. Like, of course Indy wins this game. Of course they do. If they don't, I will get a four-leaf clover tattooed on my left butt cheek.
Wow.
If the Colts lose this game.
Okay.
If the Colts lose this game, I will get a four-leaf clover tattooed on my left butt
cheek. And next Halloween, I'll go as Urban Meyer.
Perfect. There we go.
If
locked in stone. It's in stone now.
All right.
Four-leaf clover, left butt cheek on Mitch. You go as Urban Meyer.
And I'm bringing a stool with me everywhere I go. I'm just gonna be posted up.
You just have to have
Caitlin, my wife. She could go as the college mistress.
Oh, I wasn't gonna put her in that position. I was gonna say you have a mannequin or something. I wasn't gonna put your wife in that position. Are you kidding me? Your wife's a saint.
Oh my goodness. Gosh. Oh, wow. Yeah, anyway. I can't. There's no way the Colts miss the playoffs by losing to the Jacks, right?
Put me down. Put me down for four-leaf clover, though.
Yeah, we'll do all right. Okay.
You know?
You are Jones in for another tattoo, huh? So, you know,
I got good ideas for my arm, but, you know, what's $50 for a butt tattoo?
Exactly. Hey, there you go.
Not a big deal.
There you go.
Following that game, Pittsburgh, they're leaving the big catch-up bottle with Big Ben for the last time. They're headed over to Baltimore to take on the Baltimore Ravens. This one is actually a pretty tough game to pick because Baltimore not playing well. Lamar Jackson's health still up in the air. Are we going to see Tyler Huntley again? It's a really a coin flip, and we can coin flip right here if we
want. You're going to coin flip for the pick.
Yeah.
Bet on the line for the season. You're leaving it up to chance. Well, how about this, Mitch? I'll give you my pick.
Hold on. No, it's happening right now.
The coin is up.
All right, it's heads. So we are going with the Pittsburgh Steelers to win this game.
Okay.
Give me Pittsburgh. I mean, this is really the biggest coin flip game of the week, right?
It's pretty. I mean, maybe the Sunday night game with both those teams, Raiders and Chargers, at 9-7, right? But this is another one.
But that one's going to be so competitive.
Sure, but both these teams need to win. Both these teams are not in a good spot. It's not like you feel confident about the way Baltimore or Pittsburgh is playing. Lamar Jackson up in the air, that makes a big difference there. I'm going to go with the Ravens, though, Mitch.
Okay.
Mainly to vindicate my preseason pick of having them in the Super Bowl against the Packers. Obviously, they were probably not going to make the playoffs, let alone make the Super Bowl. But a little redemption for me, if they can at least go 9-8 and just barely miss or something, I'll feel a little better about myself.
So by my tally, that is the one game we differ on.
It's the first one we've differed on so far.
Okay, so now I need at least two more to be a winner, one more to tie. So. Right.
Okay.
And that's assuming we're perfect here.
That's exactly, which I mean, hey, we
which
never
actually
have
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if we have.
Right. Because we're all the same. All right, yeah. Mitch, final early slate game here. Tennessee Titans 11-5 winners of the AFC South headed down to Houston to take on the 4-12 Houston Texans, the long necked Brontosaurus Davis Mills at quarterback. Mitch,
he doesn't have a longer neck than Mike Glennon, right?
It's close. I'd love to see a side-by-side of them, actually. that would just look like a couple of dinosaurs out there.
That's gotta be
a couple
bad.
Giraffes out in the wilderness.
It's gotta be a close one.
Plains of the Serengeti. Mitch, I'm taking the Texans in this one. I'm taking the Texans and the Chiefs to secure the number one seed in the AFC. Titans fall. Someone's going to fall this week. Someone's going to fall that we didn't expect. And the Texans have been surprisingly competitive over the last couple weeks, gotten some cheeky wins. They're fighting for their lives. David Coley has them competing, which is a lot better than you could say about some of these low-level franchises in the NFL right now. So give me the Texans at home.
Yeah, I mean, so in regards to the Derrick Henry injury, this was the earliest week that he would be back, was week 18.
I believe he's off the IR, but not confirmed to play yet this week.
His first day back at practice was today.
Right.
So today being Wednesday, January 5th.
Right.
So with that being said, them being locked into a top three seed, no matter what, them having that first home game in a divisional situation, I like Houston too.
Wow,
Houston to get it done, yeah.
Okay,
Houston in a close one, because I don't think Derrick Henry plays, and I think they just play for the health, for the health going forward.
An opportunity to differ, and you stuck with it. Okay.
I was so tempted to take
Tennessee. I'd love to see what you have coming up. Let's go to the afternoon slate.
Yeah, this one's another really tough one to pick. New Orleans, they are leaving the Big Easy to head over to Hotlanta to take on the Atlanta Falcons. The Saints, like we mentioned, on the bubble. They're one of those teams competing for that final NFC wild card spot. They got the Falcons, who have at times this year looked really, really bad and have looked really, really good, or at least competitive. I like the Falcons in this one. I like the Falcons at home. Cordarrelle Patterson finishes off his year as the primary running back wearing number 84, which is weird. He finishes his breakout season, his one trademark season, in a historic fashion. Taysom Hill throws three interceptions in this game. I like Atlanta over New Orleans.
Yeah, this was easy for me, Mitch. I got the Saints in this one, mainly just because the Saints are still in the playoff race, right? They need a win. No matter what Atlanta does on Sunday, they're out of it. And Atlanta, New Orleans needs a win, and they need to hope that the Niners lose to the Rams for them to have a shot. Saints are a better team. They have a better unit overall by far in that defense, which I think will be enough in this game, despite the limitations on offense. So I've got the Saints here.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what Taysom Hill does. I just wanted to throw that in as a stab to you.
Sure.
You're a Taysom That's Hill fine. Guy, so.
It's all good. Let's go with
oh,
me.
No. Oh, no, he's competitive
six and two
now.
Is, he's
I flipped the switch.
No, you're fine. He's 6-2 as a starter for the Saints. You know, it's fine. He sucks. He's clearly horrible, but, you know, 6-2 over the last couple of years as a starter. But, you know, it's fine.
That
Mitch.
Speak for the whole team, okay?
Buddy? Mitch. AFC East. The New York Jets headed up to Buffalo to take on the 10-6 Buffalo Bills. The division's on the line for the Bills. If they win, they win the AFC East. They secure that home game first week of the playoffs. If they lose, they'll be watching the results of New England and Miami intently. But I don't think they're going to have to. I don't think they're going to have to worry about it. I think the Buffalo Bills win this game, though I do think it'll be close. Look at the game last week with the Jets and the Bucks. Jets really gave the Bucks everything that they could handle. Tom Brady had to lead them back in that game and win it. This Jets team is playing better. Zach Wilson has played much better since coming back from injury. I think he has a pretty solid performance and gives the Bills a run for their money. But the Bills win this one and secure the AFC East here at home.
Yeah, I think Buffalo is... Yeah, I think they secure this one as well. I think that they get this one done. You know what? This is a team that's fighting for a hell of a lot. And when they have to flip the switch on over the year or over the course of the year, they've shown that they can flip the switch on. So give me Buffalo at home against the Jets. Following that game, the Niners. They're leaving the city by the bay to head down to the City of Angels to take on the Los Angeles Rams at SoFi Stadium. The Rams locked in. Okay, they're not moving anywhere. I think the furthest they could fall possibly is, well, the fifth seed. Because if they lose and the Cardinals win and everyone else wins above them or below them, the Bucks, that being the Bucks and the Cowboys, they could potentially fall down to the five seed. I don't think there's going to be a lot of sitting happening here because the Niners also are fighting their way into this playoffs. I like the Niners to win this one. Niners on the road in Los Angeles. This team has a lot to fight for. I think they want to beat out the Saints team. I think this, you know, they've gotten hot. They've gotten hot, and I think they're getting hot at the right time. Give me the Niners to win.
Mitch, I'm going with the Rams in this one. This is a really close game because, again, the Niners need a win to get in, but the Rams need a win to win their division and secure a home game in the playoffs. They're still very much up for grabs here. And after, not a very impressive performance last week against the Ravens, they won that game 20-19. But, I mean, they really struggled in that game. Stafford did not look good. They need a win. They could use a win. They're getting Cam Akers back at practice after tearing an Achilles early in the preseason. Cam Akers is actually back, could be playing in the playoffs. That's crazy. But I think the Rams are going to get this win, give themselves the right momentum heading into the postseason, because I think they're going to be a dangerous team. So give me Los Angeles here, getting the win at home over the division rival San Francisco 49ers.
I don't hate that pick either. Like this
it should be a good game.
This was a tough one to pick.
Yeah, this is a tough one. Another tough one here, Mitch. New England, 10-6, headed to Miami. Mm. Take on the 8-8 Dolphins. Dolphins out of the playoffs. New England fighting for the AFC East. They need a win to even be in that. They're in the playoffs regardless. Give me the Dolphins in this one. It has been an up and down season for the Dolphins, to say the least. Started off 1-7. Right. They lost 7 straight games, won 7 straight games, fell to 8-8 last week with a disappointing loss. And I think they bounce back here with a gritty win over the Patriots. Brian Flores defeats his mentor on the final week of the season to cost Bill Belichick the division title. Give Belichick that little irking he needs before the playoffs to be extra motivated as an underdog. And I think the Dolphins get it done at home here. So give me Miami.
Hey, there's a trend over the last decade with the Patriots and the Dolphins. And if I remember correctly, New England doesn't play well in Miami towards the end of the year. I like Miami getting the win as well. Miami always finds a way to split the games, you know, split the season. This was even in the Tom Brady era. They find a way to split the games with the Patriots throughout the course of the year. They lost earlier this year to New England. I think they get it done here week 18 against the Patriots. No harm, no foul, though. Patriots still in. Miami gets ends the season on a high note. I like Miami. Following that game, your Panthers traveling over to Tampa Bay. The 12-4 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tampa Bay, I think, is going to – it's hard to say if they're sitting anyone. It's hard to say because they keep everything so secretive. Bruce Arians really does a good job of keeping things from the public and not letting them know what's going on. I'll take the upset.
Wow.
Keep pounding Carolina on the road in Tampa Bay.
Wow. I won't even pick the Panthers at this point in the season, Mitch. That's crazy. I mean, listen, they could be starting Kyle Trask, right? The Bucs could be starting Kyle Trask as the backup on Sunday as like a, hey, we're 12-4. We're going to be one of the top four seeds. We can't get the number one seed. What else is there to play for? Let's just be healthy. As they probably should with Mike Evans dinged up with a 40,000 year old quarterback and Tom Brady, they could, an older offensive line,
4,400 year old.
Yeah, exactly. You could be motivated to just rest some guys and get on with the week. I'm still going to pick Tampa to win this one though, just cause I cannot pick the Panthers right now. They look awful. They look horrendous.
They're bad. They're bad. But you know what?
And I don't even know who's playing a quarterback. Matt Rhule made it sound like it could be PJ Walker. It could be Sam Darnold. It could be Cam Newton. It could be Matt Barkley.
Which
they might call
the
Jake
pick.
Delhomme. Jake Delhomme's the color guy on the radio. He'll be in the stadium. Just kind of come down at halftime.
Chris Winkie
might be available. I mean, Jimmy Clausen, give him a second shot. I mean, who knows at this point? So I don't know. I just can't pick my Panthers right now. Good for you. Yeah. I appreciate the vote of confidence here, but
You know what?
Yeah, also, I'm motivated for a better pick. Let's get into the top five of the draft, bro. Let's go. I mean,
a lot of question marks in this game. Why not?
Yeah, I like it. I like it. All right. Well, Mitch, final Saturday afternoon game, NFC West. Seattle Seahawks 6-10 put it on the Detroit Lions last week, 50 plus points in that game. And they're headed to Arizona to take on the Cardinals. 11-5 for the Cardinals. Again, fighting for maybe a chance to the NFC West. Certainly a playoff bound, locked into the five seed. In fact, win or lose if they're still the five seed. But I'm going to take Arizona in this game, Mitch. I just don't trust the Seahawks at this point. It's been pretty up and down for them. I don't know how motivated they are at this point in the season. Might be Russ's last game as a Seahawk. I just don't know. And the thing is they've been able to run the ball really well the last couple of weeks with Rashad Penny. And the Cardinals just proved that they could shut down the run pretty well against the Cowboys. So I think that works in Arizona's favor here.
Yeah, I got Arizona as well. I mean, they're fighting for a little bit more in this playoff spot. I don't think they bench right away. I think if they get up early, big and early, then they start to bench. But I like Arizona against Seattle, definitely. Could be Russell's swan song in Seattle this week. So, or for Seattle, not in Seattle, but for Seattle. Following that game, Sunday Night Football. Probably the biggest matchup of the week. Game of the week?
Yeah, I mean, it's win and you're in. Simple as that. Or it could be tie and we're both in. Who knows?
Seems weird to give game of the week to two 9-7 teams, but right? Yeah, win or you're in. This should be the most competitive game of the week. The Chargers leaving the City of Angels to head over to Sin City to take on the Las Vegas Raiders. We're going to have a new nickname at the end of the week, Dallin. Big Dick Derek. Derek's going to show up. He will show out. Give me the Las Vegas Raiders to get it done over the Chargers. I love that pick. He will get this done over the Chargers, and the Raiders will get in and be a sneaky wild card team in the playoffs moving forward.
Okay, can I pick a tie? Is that? Oh, I'm just kidding. I can't pick a tie. No, I
not when you pick the Colts to win. You can't do that.
I am gonna go. I'm gonna go with the Chargers here, Mitch.
Okay.
Go with the Chargers because I expected them to be the playoff team over the Raiders going into this season. I feel like the Chargers have a higher ceiling. I feel like they're destined to make this first playoff run with a young quarterback in Justin Herbert and an opportunity to sort of feel this out. I know it's in Las Vegas. I know Vegas has gone through a lot this year, and this will certainly be a competitive game. But I'm going to bet on the Chargers to get it done. Justin Herbert doing enough to get his team to the playoffs in his second season and take that step forward as a franchise. That was the expectation, right, for the Chargers coming into this year. Compete in the AFC West, make a wild card, get that first taste with this young quarterback. They've made, I think, for the most part this year, necessary growth. This would be the final piece for them to have a successful 2021 would be to make the playoffs here. So I'm going with the Chargers.
Okay.
And that is it. The final week of the NFL quick picks for the Sports Hour here. It has been fun. And Woo! We always will make picks throughout the playoffs, as we always do. But this is it for the quick picks. This is it for the competition. Comes Ooh. Down to this.
Who will be managing the TikTok at the end of the year?
And if it's a tie, I guess we just have to add the playoffs and we'll go from there and we'll just do the playoffs as well. That's and see where it goes. You know,
your wife shoots your TikTok videos. I find someone to shoot my TikTok videos and we post them at the same time and we do it the side by side.
And we both have to do it. A little competition. Who gets the most views? That could be spicy. Well, I'm not hoping for a tie because I don't really want to do this, but that could be fun.
Yeah. And then, tiebreaker is who gets most views on the first video.
Ooh, and then whoever loses has to continue it. Oh, Mitch, yeah. That's good. That's good, Mitch.
Yeah, here we
I
are.
Like it.
Here
all right.
We are. Okay, all right. Here we go.
The stakes are high. It has come down to the wire, and that is it for the podcast today.
I'm so going to lose.
I can't wait to watch you. I can't wait to watch your sexy ass dancing on that TikTok. Guys, it has been a pleasure to be here with you guys recording this podcast. 2022 brings with it new opportunities, and we look forward to the year to come and all the fun to be had here on the podcast. So we appreciate you being a part of it, listening in as you have. Mitch, tell the people where they can follow us on our socials.
That's right. You can go ahead and give us a follow on Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys. Follow us on Twitter at Sports Hour Guys. You can go ahead and also listen to us on anchor.fm/The Sports Hour Guys. But there's multiple other platforms you can listen to us on. There's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get yours. Go ahead and leave a rating review on Apple Podcasts. Tell us we suck because that is the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we could get better. We aren't lying about that. We really would like you to leave us a rating and a review and be honest about how you feel about us. And go on Anchor, anchor.fm/The Sports Hour.
Leave us
guys.
A voice message, man.
Be a part of the conversation. We want to hear from you. What do you think was the best moment from 2021 in sports? Maybe of the ones we included, maybe just sports in general outside of the leagues that we talked about. I mean, I think of Hideki Matsuyama winning the Masters, right? That was a big moment in sports this year. A fantastic moment. There are so many.
Speaking of golf, Tiger and Charlie playing that pro-am.
That was so cool. I mean, even Phil Mickelson this summer and at his age coming back and playing the way that he has. So, I mean, that's just golf. We just talked about golf. There's way more out there. So if you have any thoughts on that, please share with us. We'd love to hear from you and we'd love to use them here on the podcast. So that'll be it for us. Mitch, appreciate you being here with me as always, buddy. It's a pleasure. Another year ahead of us. I can't wait. Thanks for listening, guys. We love you. We appreciate you. And we will catch you next week.
See ya.